Okay, we're beginning with the Mishnah on the top of Nun Vav Amud Aleph. The Mishnah begins, Eilu Trefot Bo'ol. So as opposed to what we've seen until now in Eilu Trefot, which were with regards to a Behemah, here is the list for the oath. In general, and we're going to see this in the Gemara, they are very similar. Whatever is true in the Behemah is true in the oath. There are some exceptions which the Mishnah or the Gemara will focus on, as well as the fact that there are certain organs that don't exist inside of an oath that do exist inside of a ruminant. And therefore, obviously, they're not going to be applicable. All of that become apparent when we see that in the Gemara. Nekuvata Veshet comes to the esophagus, just like by the Beima, a hole or any hole whatsoever is considered to be a trefa. Upsukat Hagargeret, as well as a break in the trachea. Again, Sukat Gargeret is obviously of a larger size than a Nekuvata Veshet. And here, again, all of these situations, you have to discuss what the Chiddush is that you wouldn't have known from that which you know by the Behema. And again, here, the likelihood is Psukata Gargeret, the splitting or the breaking of the trachea, because the trachea of the oaf is very small. Its life force is much smaller. The fact that by Gargeret you still need a Psuka is a Chiddush by the oaf, versus the Nekev by the Veshet, which would be similar to a Behema, but they're brought in contrast. Psukata Gargeret, as we've noted before, means that it's split across the circumference cut along the width of the trachea, because in that way the pressure will cause it to tear further versus something where it's cut along the lengthwise of the trachea, where the tension will actually close up that cut, or until you have something that is chisaron, that is a larger size of chisaron, which again we discussed by behema, by oaf, obviously that amount would be smaller because the oaf is smaller. Yikta chuda arusha. It was attacked by a chuda on its head. Again, here, the chuda is a machloket amongst the Rishonim as to what it is exactly. We'll loosely term it as a weasel. And the reason that this is brought by the oaf is because it's not as relevant by the behema. It has to do with the smallness of the head of the oaf, as well as the fact that it has a softer membrane around its brain and protection, and therefore there's more likely to have a problem. Now, as far as a chuda attacking a bird, we already saw previously in the perek that with regards to drusa, if it attacked it with its hand, swiped it with its claw, that was keneged b'nei ma'ayim. That affects the entirety of the areas opposite the vital organs of the behema. So that's not what we're speaking of over here, and that's what Rashi notes here. It's hikta is nashachta v'shineha. It's talking about a bite, not a swipe of the claw. And that's why we're not speaking about the classic cases of drusa. We're worried about a puncture in the head of the bird. If it hikta chuda rasha makom shel seota trefa, if it's in a place where it makes it into a trefa, then it's problematic. We'll see in the Gemara that if the tooth penetrated through the skull and the membrane of the brain, that's going to be problematic. As opposed to, again, the swipe of the claw of the weasel, which would affect the bird not only on the head, but would affect the bird, keneged kol b'nei me'ayim, keneged the own internal organs, whether that includes just the digestive system or other items as well, that we discussed in Rashi and Tosafot earlier in the perek. Nikei v'kurkuban, if there's a hole in the gizzard, nikvu hadakin, there's a hole in the intestines, both of those are considered to be a trefa. Nafla l'ur, if it fell into a fire, v'nechmeru b'nei me'eha, and its innards were singed, scorched. Interestingly enough, Rashi brings a proof to the language of Nechmeru from the Posuk in Eicha, which says, Ma'ai Charmar Meru, that my innards were churning and turning over. But the idea being that something has happened to the internal organs of the animal. And over here, because it was in a fire, they were scorched, they were singed. Im Yerukim Psulim, if they are green, then they're Pasul. Im adumim kshirim. If they are red, then they are kshirim. Rashi has a girsa of im horiku, although the shita mikubetza changes it back to yirukim, because yirukim would be more along the lines of green, whereas horiku would be along the lines of more yellowish or pale. The Gemara will discuss and bring a braita that it has to do with the nature of the organ. Some organs start out as being red, and therefore if they turn greenish or they turn yellow, they're problematic. Whereas if they stay red, they're fine. Other organs start out with a lighter color, with a yellowish or greenish color. Obviously, if they turn green, then they're the same color as they were before, and that's not problematic. And if they turn red, that is problematic. So it has to do with the starting point. Here we're speaking about organs that are normally red and now are changing colors. If they change color, they're trefa. If they are still red, then they are kshirim. Again, we'll give more discussion to that in the Gemara. Drasa v'tarfa bakotel. If it was crushed underfoot or thrown against the wall by a human being, or it was trampled by an animal, and it's still flopping around, and it waits 24 hours, meaning that it's still alive 24 hours later. If you shecht at that point, it is kshira. And as Rashi notes over here, obviously it needs a bdika if you do such. It's all if the animal doesn't get up or the animal doesn't walk. If the bird got up, then you would shecht it right away. You would just need to do a bdika. If it started to walk, it moved, then you wouldn't even need a bdika. That's similar to what we saw before by the animals. Obviously, in the Mishnah here, we're speaking about a situation in which it didn't get up and it didn't walk, and that's why you have to wait the requisite mi'eit, the 24 hours, before we're allowed you to shecht it and then do the bdika, because we're afraid the trauma has created a problem of trefa over here. So Rashi notes at the beginning of the Mishnah, and this is what we noted before as well, afagav d'chol trefo beima k'negdan bof, hani itztrichu lei l'mitne. Anything that's mentioned in our Mishnah needs to be mentioned because of the chidush that's associated with it. We already discussed sukkat gargaret, which is that even though the oaf is much smaller, you still need a larger cut or a larger problem with the trachea in order for it to be a trefa. It's not enough in terms of a puncture. Hiktach huda is because of the nikubat akrum, which is only with regards to birds, either because birds have a weaker head, as we said before, or because a weasel can't do that much damage to a behema versus an oaf. And because of that, this is only relevant by opot. And again, we'll discuss later on in the Gemara that there's difference between birds and the thickness of their membrane versus the thickness of the membrane of the behema. And therefore, there's a hierarchy of those that will be injured more easily. And so obviously that's a factor here with regards to the weasel attacking the bird. And the hole in the intestines is a lead-in to the, both the fire with regards to the internals of the bird, as well as we're going to see in the Gemara, the turnover of the intestines or movements of the intestines that are also impactful. So Rashi goes through each of these to explain why they're relevant by a bird and why there's a chiddush for them by a bird. Whether the burning of the intestines or in the internals has application by behema is subject to a machloket rishonim as to whether this is unique by a bird just because birds end up in the fire more easily than a behema, or because the bird is a smaller animal, therefore the fire has a disproportionate impact on it versus an animal, or whether maybe there is the same din by animals as it is by birds. It's just more likely to happen by a bird than it is to happen by an animal. Rav Shmuel v'Levi, d'amrei, they all say, machnis yado lifnim ubodek. You stick your finger in and you check it. Im mevatzveitz vola, if it pushes out, it squeezes out and it comes out, trefa v'imlav sheira. If it's not, it's sheira. The Gemara seems to start in the middle of a conversation, not giving you any context. But what they are referencing to is in the Mishnah, the attack of the weasel. How do we know that the attack of the weasel has done damage to the head of the bird to the point now where it would be a trefa? In order for the bird to be a trefa, you need a puncture of the membrane that surrounds the bird's brain. Similar to the animals, the Gemara is going to discuss here that there are two membranes that sit on top of the brain. There's one that sits right below the skull. There's another one that sits directly on the brain. And truth is that there really are three membranes, not two, but two of them are very close together. The same machloket that we had before by Behema is going to apply here. The Gemara before discussed by Behema, which of the membranes needs to be punctured in order for it to be problematic. By the Behema, it was a question of whether you need both membranes to be punctured, or even if the upper membrane is punctured, we assume that the lower membrane will puncture as well, even if it's not. Or maybe it is kasher when the lower membrane is still intact. So here you have the same physiology by the bird, and the same questions and the same opinions will apply by the bird. What we're fearful of when the weasel attacks the head of the bird is that it punctured through the skull. But not only did it puncture the skull, it also punctured the membranes of the brain of the birds. Question is, how do you know? It's very hard to test, very hard to know whether it was that way or not. That's what Rav Shmuel and Levi are saying. We have a way to test it. You stick your finger into the mouth of the bird, obviously after it checked it, otherwise it won't work so well. And then you stick it up into the palate of the bird. By pushing the palate of the bird, you're putting pressure on the brain. If there is a hole in the membrane surrounding the brain, you'll start to see liquid. You'll see something that is pressing out of this, because not only is there a hole then in the skull, there's a hole in the membrane, and liquid will start to escape through that hole. So by doing that, you can test whether there really is a hole through the membrane of the brain of the bird. So Gemara says, that's true according to the one who believes that in order to be a treifa, you need both membranes to be punctured, the lower one and the upper one. That means that there's a hole all the way through. So when you put pressure, liquid will escape through the hole. According to the one who says that, if the outer membrane is broken, even if the lower membrane is not broken, it is already a treifa. Then why don't we worry about the fact that the outer membrane was punctured, the inner membrane was not punctured, and if you put pressure on it, nothing's going to come out because there's still a membrane intact there. It says, because if the outer membrane is already punctured, the inner membrane is soft and similar to the brain itself, meaning that the color or the nature of that membrane is very similar to the brain itself, and if you put pressure on it, it will move. It's liquidy enough or it's soft enough that you will get some movement and you will see something coming out of the hole. Even if it's not the liquid itself, it's soft enough that you will get some indication that there's something wrong there, which is the original reason why the one who thinks that the outer membrane, when it's punctured, is already a treifa, because he says it's inevitable that the inner membrane will be punctured as well, because the inner membrane is so soft and it's very thin, sits right on top of the brain. It is the pia mater. So Amar Ziri, so now Ziri comes along and says, Ein bedika l'chuda, there's no way to check the bite of a chuda, mipnei shishinei dakot, because it has very narrow or very thin teeth. V'chi shinei dakot, mayhavi. Why does it matter that it has thin or narrow teeth? The whole idea here is that there's a hole. If there's a hole, something's going to escape to the liquid. So Amar Boshaya, mipnei shishinei dakot, ve'akumot. The problem is not simply the narrowness or the sharpness of the teeth. It has to do with the fact that they are curved, the teeth. And that means when it bites the head of the bird, the way that the teeth go in is on an angle. It curves in when they bite. And the problem is that you have a possibility that the hole in the membrane is not aligned with the hole in the skull because of that curvature. And then when you put pressure below, it will turn out that the hole in the membrane actually will press up against the skull and not allow for the escape of the liquid, versus the case where if they were parallel, then the liquid would come through. And that's why Ziri says there's no way to use this test, because the test is not going to be effective. Kitzalik le'Narda. When Ziri went up to Narda, shalach lohu, he sent back to them after he had been somewhere. Now the word salik usually means aliyah, to go up, and in the Gemara is used in reference to going to Eretz Yisrael. But here it's speaking about going to Narda. And as Rashi notes over here, he was somewhere else in Bavel, and he went up to Narda. So whether that means that the place that he was in was lower, it was closer to the rivers, the major rivers in Bavel, the Tigris Euphrates rivers, and therefore when he went up, he went from lower areas to Narda, which was slightly higher, or whether it's a play on the idea, Kisalik is not always physically, but maybe figuratively, when he went Aliyah, he went to the place of learning of Narda. Then he sent back to them, Dvarim Shamarti Livnechem Ta'utein Biyadi. That which I told you over before, that there's no check for a chuldas bite, is incorrect. Braham, Kach Amru Mishmei de Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. This is what they say over in the name of Rish Lakish. Bodkim de chulda biyad. You could check a chulda by finger. Avalo bimasmer, but not through a nail. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Af bimasmer. Not only can you check with the hand, you can always check with the nail as well. So we're going to discuss in a minute what the different views are here with regards to this. But the question is, which one is a more effective check in terms of checking the membrane having a hole in it? The one of pushing up and using your hand, we already saw, which is that you put pressure from underneath the palate push up on the brain, if liquid escapes, you know that there's a hole in the membrane. On the other hand, the way to check it with the masmer is to remove the cranium, the skull of the bird, and then run a nail over the brain and see if it catches. If it catches, you know then there's a hole in the membrane because it's catching on the hole. If there's no hole there, then the nail will run smoothly across the top of the brain without any problem. The Gemara says now, Upeplukta de Rabbi Yehuda ve Rabbi Nechemya. This machloket Reish Lakish Rabbi Yochanan, which is a machloket Amoraim, is parallel to a machloket Tanaim of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya. Chad bodik biyodo, one of them says that you check by hand. Chad bodik b'machto, and one of them checked by a needle. Man de bodik biyodo, the one who checks by hand, which is the test that we've seen all along, Amarle, the man de bodik b'machto, said to the one who uses a needle, Ad matay ata mechalem omenan shel Yisrael. How long are you going to keep doing this practice and costing B'nai Yisrael tremendous amounts of money? If you use a needle to check the membrane of the brain, you're taking a very sharp object, you're running it along the membrane, you'll have a better way of checking using the needle because it's a very fine object going across there. If there's any hole, it will catch. But there's also a high likelihood that you yourself will cause the hole in the membrane because you're running a sharp object over the membrane itself. The one who says that you should check with the needle, the man the modik biyodo, he says the one who says you check by hand, ad matay tay machil lishon nevelot. How long is it going to be that you continue this practice and end up giving B'nai Yisrael nevelot? Nevelot? Why is it called a nevela? Vashkutahi, you shechted it. It's not a nevela, at worst it is a trefa. Ela trefot. How long is it going to be you're going to feed them trefot? Shema nikev krum shamoach. Because maybe there's a hole and you're not discovering the hole because you're using a more coarse, gross type of check, which won't get to the finer holes that are in the membrane. So your check is not sufficient, is not good enough, and therefore you're going to cause things to be kasher, even though they really are trefot. And the other side says, if you check with a fine needle, yes, you'll catch all the trefot, but you're also going to make trefot along the way. And the question is, what is the worthwhile trade-off over here? The number of points to make over here, the first of which is, the Gemara compares the Machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish to that Machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya. The Machloket Amoraim to Machloket Tanaim. The truth is that they don't match. Because Reish Lakish said that you check by hand. That matches up with whichever Deya we hear here in the Tanaim says that you check by hand. Rabbi Yochanan on the other hand said, Af bimasmer. You can also check with a nail. That means that he agrees that you can use a yad for checking. He just offered another alternative. In the Machloket Tanaim, it's clear that they are mutually exclusive positions. Whoever thinks you check with the needle thinks the one who's checking with the yad is not doing a good job. It's not a good check. But Rabbi Yochanan said checking by hand is a good check. So the Baalei HaTosafot already point this out. He says, Ubeplukta lav davka. They don't have the same Machloket. Rabbi Yochanan damar af b'masmer lo k'Rabbi Yehuda v'lo k'Rabbi Nechemya. Rabbi Yochanan who says you can use both a nail and a hand doesn't work with either of two opinions in the Braita there, and therefore this is not really a parallel machloket. Tosafot just leaves it that way. The Beit Yosef himself notes that in his Klalei HaPsak, that when it comes to these comparisons of Plukta, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's an exact machloket. It just means that there is some machloket Tanaim that is similar in nature to the machloket that we have by the Amoraim. It doesn't have to be exact in nature. There are others, like the Rosh, who point out that there is a distinction between what Rabbi Yochanan says and that which is said in the Braita. And that would then actually explain the difference. And that is that in the Braita, the machloket is between using your hand and using a machto, a needle, which is very fine and very narrow, versus a masmer, which is something that is wider or thicker, which would not cause the problem. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yochanan's view, he would think that both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya would agree with his position. He says that they only disagree there because they're using a needle, which is so fine that it's going to tear the membrane. But a nail, or something that has a wider point to it, will do the good job even better. It'll allow you to catch those things that yad would not catch, but it's not sharp enough that it will actually cause a puncture in the membrane. So that's the other way to deal with it, which is to say, yes, the machloket works. It's just that for Reish Lakish, it will have to be a machloket. For Rabbi Yochanan, he actually might have both Tanaim agree with his position. That's number one. Number two is, Tosafot points out, that Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion, when it comes to shechting a bird, the shechita of a bird does not take it out of the world of nevela. As opposed to behema, where shechita changes it from a nevela into a treifa, if there's a problem found, not in the shechita, then there's no tumat nevela. On the other hand, he believes by a bird, both melika and shechita are not successful at removing the bird from the din of nevela, and therefore it would be a nevela in this case. So why is the Gemara so perplexed by the fact that he said it's a nevela? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it would be a nevela. So Tosafot gives two answers. One answer is that it's Rabbi Nechemya that's speaking over here, not Rabbi Yehuda. It has to be something that is said according to both opinions at this point in time. It has to fit into both Rabbi Nechemya and Rabbi Yehuda. And since Rabbi Nechemya's position is not that way, then you can't say over here nevela, you'd have to say treifa. Or since there was a shechita and that was done, it's still inappropriate to call it a nevela, even if it happens to be a nevela. And therefore, it should have used the word treifa, not nevela. Tistayim, the Rabbi Yehuda, the Badik, Viyodo. Let us conclude that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who has that view that you can check by hand. I mean that the Gemara brought Machloket Tanaim without assigning or attributing which position belongs to whom. Over there, it just said Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya and brought both positions down. Now the Gemara is saying, let's assign the position of checking by hand to Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanya. Bishum ben Elazar Omer, Bishum Rabbi Yehuda, so that's that we have Rabbi Yehuda here, Potkim lechuda biyad, you can check for a weasel's bite by hand, Avalo b'masmer, not with a nail. Now this would upend the distinction that we made before, which was that there's a difference between a machto and a masmer, because over here it's saying biyad ben over masmer. Nishbara etzem, if the bone is broken, if the cranium or the skull is broken, Apo pishalom nikev krum shomoach, even though there's no puncture of the membrane. Now that last line of the Braita is very difficult, and the Gemara will ask about it in a second. Tistayim, let us at least conclude here that it's pretty clear that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of the position of Yehuda, because he says it explicitly over here. We call it the name of Rabbi Yehuda, that you check by hand, not by a masmer. Then, Hagufa Kasha. Now we have a problem, an internal stira in that Braita. Amarta botkim the chuda biyad of a little bit masmer. You said that you check the chuda, because obviously you think that there is a problem over here, and that's why you're checking. You're checking to see whether you can figure out whether the problem exists or doesn't exist. Alma, itlahu b'dikuta. That sounds like there is a way to check it. Bahadur tani, and then it says in the remainder of the Braita, nishbara etzem, if the skull is broken, apo pishaloni cave krum shomach. Even though the krum shomach is not punctured, sounds like it would be a treifa. So why not just check and see if it is broken or not broken? Alma leitlehu b'dikuta. Sounds like from the latter half of the Braita, as soon as the cranium is broken, then there's no way to check, and you automatically assume that there's a problem with the membrane. When it says, seifa atan of shamayim, the latter half of the Braita is referencing to birds of the water. Hoil, vein lo krum, because it has no membrane, ein lo krum, sagadata, you think there's no membrane there? Eloho v'krum orach, because it has a much softer membrane, therefore there is no check. You will automatically assume once it goes through the skull that the membrane has been punctured. So here we have these three gradations now with regards to the head. You have a behemoth's head, which is much stronger, much more solid, both from the side of the skull as well as the membrane. You have regular fowl, where the membrane is thick enough that if there's a puncture of the skull, we're going to make you check to see if the membrane was punctured. Then there's waterfowl, whereby as soon as the skull is punctured, we automatically assume that the membrane is punctured because their membranes are very soft. As to what the definition of waterfowl is, Rashi over here says, tamid hein b'mayim, that they're always found in the water. I mean, that's where they spend their time, that's where they live. They live in the water. In terms of kosher birds, but likely in today, the things that we're familiar with would be geese and ducks that are in that category. Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Anan. Rav Nachman says, Rav Anan, Mar Amar Shmuel, Bodig Biyodo Umakshir. You said, Shmuel, check with the finger, and you need me Makshir. Behuna Chavrin Amar, and Ravuna, our peer, our friend, who is a Talmud Mubak of Rav, he says, Rav, Bodig Biyodo, Rav, check with a finger, Umakshir. And he's Makshir based on that check. If you look at the first line in the Gemara, Rav, Shmuel, Velevi, Damre, Maknisya, Dodifnim, Ubutek. So this is the Masorah that we have from Rav and Shmuel, that you can check with the finger. So over there, Rabbi Nachman saying to Rav Anan, you brought from the name of Shmuel, and Ravona brought from the name of Rav, this idea that a finger can do the checking. Tosva says the reason that they brought it down in this manner, and not like what we brought before, we have an explicit memra from Rav and Shmuel and Levi, is because over here you have a maisa. So it wasn't only theoretical halacha that they said. Here we see them acting on that halacha. That's much stronger statement that they really believe that this is the halacha, and that goes up against this brayta from Levi. Vahatani Levi. How can you say that? We have a brayta from Levi. Treifot shemanu chachamim be'ema, connectan both. This is what I referenced to in the beginning of the Gemara today, which is this brayta is the basis for this idea that whatever treifot exists by be'ema is also going to exist by an oath. I mean that they're basically parallel. And obviously things that don't appear in an oath, which are by behema, including like hemsates and beta kosot, the reticulum and the omasum, they're not going to be trefot that are applicable to an oath because they just don't exist inside of an oath. Yet alehem oath. The other trefot that exist only by birds, that don't exist by animals, nishpar ha'etzem, afo pishat lo nikev krum shomoach. If the skull is broken without the membrane being punctured, by the animal, that would not be true. By the animal, if the cranium was broken, as long as the membrane of the brain was intact, it wouldn't be a problem. Over here, we're saying that if the cranium is broken by the bird, even though the membrane's intact, it is a treifah. So that would go against this idea that you could check. That would mean that you can't check. As soon as the cranium is broken, it's done, and we don't need to check because it's already a treifah before the membrane breaks. So that would go against what Rav and Shmuel said. So, Amalei, Ha'ubov Shamayim. The answer to that is that's a reference to the waterfowl again. The waterfowl have that din, the same thing that we saw in the Braita before. Ho'il ve'en lo krum. Since it doesn't have a membrane around the brain. Ve'en lo krum sagadatcha. Again, it doesn't have a membrane. Elo ho v'krum arach. It has a much softer membrane. Therefore, the breaking of the cranium is enough to deem it a treifah, even without a puncture of that membrane that is around the brain. Now, what's interesting about this is the Gemara brought the question on Rav and Shmuel. You say, how can Rav and Shmuel say this? You have a braita from Levi. Look at the first line in our Gemara. Rav Shmuel v'Levi. You have Rav Shmuel and Levi saying that you can check by hand. So then Levi himself says that you can check by hand. The question should have been on Levi himself. This is stira in the braita that Levi brings versus Levi's own opinion. Why doesn't the Gemara bring the question on Levi himself? That's what Tosafot says over here. B'china makshe mi braita Rav Shmuel. Said it was unnecessary to ask on the braita from Rav Shmuel. Da Levi gufei havimatsi the mifrach. They could ask directly on Levi. The fact they brought it in his context, maybe that's the way the question was asked, and therefore they just bring it down that way. But he says they could have asked the question straight out on Levi, because he was the one mentioned above that also says you can check by hand, and now you have a braita that says you can't check. So that would be a stira in Levi himself. There are Rishonim that don't have the gears of Levi in the beginning of the Gemara, and then that would obviate the whole problem over here. That's why they're asking for Rav Shmuel and not by Levi. According to our Gemara where you have Levi in there, the Balei Tosafot say that bringing it from Rav Shmuel was meaningless because you could have just brought it directly from Levi. Haini Tana Goloto, Tahava Bei Rav Chano. So there was this chicken that was found in the house of Rav Chano. Shadu the Kameh Rav Matna. They sent it before Rav Matna to check it. Nishbar etzem veloni kev krum shomoach havai. It was a situation in which the cranium was broken, but the membrane was intact. Va'akshara, and he was makshar it. He paskin that it was kasher. Amalei, so he sends back to him, Vatani Levi, trefot shemanu chachomim b'mema, k'negdam bo'ov. Yeter lehem ov shenishbar etzem ha'fish loni kev krum shomoach. That breita that we just brought before, that seems to indicate if the cranium is broken, then automatically it's a treifah, even though the membrane has not been punctured. Again, that's a reference to waterfowl. Hove ain lo krum, because it doesn't have a membrane. Mars says the same thing again. Ain lo krum, sakadatka. How could it not have a membrane? Elaim ho v'krum orach. Since it has a much softer membrane, therefore as soon as the cranium, the skull is broken, we assume that the membrane is problematic. It is a treifah immediately. But that means like Tana Galata, which is clearly not an of shomayim, will have the din of if the skull is broken, you can check and see if the membrane's intact. If the membrane's intact, then it is fine. It's not a treifah. Rav Shizvi bodik b'shimsha. Rav Shizvi used to check it by the sunlight. He used to peel the membrane off of the brain, then hold it up to the light and see if he saw a hole through the membrane. That was the way he checked it. Rav Yemer bodik b'mayo. Rav Yemer used to check by water. Rashi brings two possibilities of how you check with water. The first of which is to cut the back of the neck of the bird, and then through the spinal column, you drain the brain out. You take out all the liquid of the brain, you drain it out, and then you leave the skull and the membrane intact. Then you refill it with water. And by refilling with water, you see if any of the water that you refill the head with escapes through the membrane, and then you could see if there's a hole in the membrane. To me, it's amazing because the amount of effort and work that you would have to do to drain the brain out and then refill it with water, you would assume the membrane would tear just because of the fact that you did all of that to it. The same thing with taking out the membrane and checking in the sun. It's a huge amount of handling of the membrane. You would think there would just be a hole just because you handled the membrane itself. And that's one way that Rashi says it. The other way Rashi suggests is that you pour water into the hole, where the hole in the skull is, and then the water will go into that hole and then come back out again. When it comes out, what's the color of the water? The water remains clear, then that means that there's no hole in the membrane. If the water that comes out cloudy or with some other consistency in it, that means that the water's entering is mixing with the brain fluid, and that brain fluid now is escaping, and that means that there's a hole in the membrane. That's the second way Rashi suggests in terms of checking by water. I mean, that the way it works is that you have the outer skin, then you have a little flesh, then you have the skull, and then right under the skull is the first membrane. After that, there's actually a second membrane there. Then there's the liquid, which is the CSF, the liquid that goes down the spinal fluid. That same liquid exists up in the brain. And then there's the lower membrane, which is the membrane that sits on the brain itself. So the liquid actually sits between the two membranes. And so that way you know that if there's a puncture. But I think that both of these checks seem to indicate to me that we're only looking for a hole in the outer membrane and not the inner membrane. Because, first of all, the liquid in the brain sits between the two membranes. And therefore, if you're getting cloudiness, you're getting liquid that's coming out, we're assuming that the liquid is leaching from in between the two membranes. And that means that the lower membrane still could be intact. That's number one. And number two, Badik B'Shimsha, when you check it by the sun, the outer membrane, the one that is near the skull, is a membrane that you probably could pull off. The one closer to the brain is much harder to pull off because it's thinner, and it looks like the brain, and is much more likely to tear when you're taking it off. So it seems to me, according to both of these opinions, that you're checking the outer membrane and not the inner membrane, and therefore it's going according to the opinion that the outer membrane is enough. When it's punctured, it's considered a treifa. Ravacha bar Yaakov bodik ve'gila dechitata. He checks it by a wheat straw. So now again here, it's not clear what is meant by a wheat straw. In Sichat Chulin, he brings two possibilities. One is that you're using a wheat straw the same way that they used to use the nail or the needle. It has a certain sharpness to its edge, and you're running it along the membrane to see if it catches. The other possibility is that you use it as a straw itself. You actually stick it in there. It's a very narrow type of straw, like literally the word that we use today of straw, where you can suck something up. You can pull liquid up. So you stick it over there in the hole, and then through the straw you pull, create a suction by sucking up on the straw, and you see if any liquid comes up the straw. And in that way you would know whether there's liquid that's leaching over there or not leaching over there. If there's no hole, then nothing's going to come up the straw. If there is a hole there, it's going to pull liquid up the straw. That's again another way to check it. Just interesting, if you remember back on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Bet, that the Gemara also had many ways to check a knife, a shechita knife. And over there you had an opinion. Check it by the sunlight, check it by water. There were other opinions over there. They don't exactly match up with the opinions over here. It's just interesting that we had a similar list of checks over by the shechita knife as we have over here by the checking of the membrane of the uf. Amar Rav Shizvi, Hani Avze Didan, Gargis, B'Ka'ov Shomayim Damyan. They have the same classification as a waterfowl. I mean, today also you would assume that when it comes to ducks and geese, even though they're on and off the land and into the water, nevertheless, they spend enough time in the water that they have a classification as waterfowl. And that means that automatically, if the skull is cracked, then the membrane, it doesn't matter anymore. We assume that it is a treifa and you don't have to check the membrane. Nafla l'ur, if it falls in a fire. I'm Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Yossi ben Yoshua. Shi'ur Yerukatan ki Shi'ur Nikuvatan. How much has to change color in order for it to be considered a treifa? Is the same amount as if it's punctured. Or in essence, what he's saying is the discoloration of the organs is an indication of decomposition. And our assumption is that a hole will develop over there. And since a hole will develop over there, that is exactly what's going to make it into a treifa. So whatever size hole you need in order for it to be a treifa, that same din will apply to Yerukatan, the discoloration of the organs. So ma nikuvatan b'masho, just like a puncture in certain of these organs, even the smallest puncture, it's going to create into a treifa. Af Yerukatan b'masho, so too the discoloration is of the same amount, because again, the discoloration is an indication of a problem that will lead to nikuva in the end, and therefore you just assume it is nikuva. By mine, Rav Yosef braid Rav Yeshua ben Levi, mi Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Rav Yosef asked of his father, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Horika Kaved Keneged Bnei Me'ayim Mahu. If the liver turns green towards the side of the intestines, what is the din? Amarlei Trefa. It's a Trefa. V'lo Yehei Ela Nikla. So his son says back to him, why should that be? Rabbi Yochanan's din suggests that Yerukan, the discoloration of the innards, has the same din as the puncture. So if something would be a trefa as a puncture, then so too the discoloration would be a mashu. Of here he's saying, okay, the kaved, the liver discolored. We already learned that a liver, if it's missing, the animal's not a trefa. Nitla kaved shala. If the kaved's taken out, two mishnayot, we had a steer on the mishnayot, whether you need a kazayit left, or if you need a mashu left. Either way, a large part of the liver could be gone, and it's not a trefa. So why are you telling me over here that because the part of the liver that is green on the side facing the intestines, that makes it into a trefa, the kaved, even if you look at it as if it's missing, nikla, it wouldn't be a problem. Amarova, kevin shorika kaved keneged b'nei me'ayim, yadua shnafla l'ur. Since the liver is greenish towards the intestines, therefore we know it fell into the fire. B'nechmeru b'nei me'ayim v'trefa. And that is indicative or a sign that the innards were injured by the fire. They were affected by the fire. And therefore it is a trefa. What's not clear here is whether the problem is with the liver or the problem is with the b'nei ayim. First of all, in terms of the liver, where the liver sits in the body of the bird, a portion of the liver touches on the b'nei ayim. The other half of the liver faces out towards the front. Is not connected to b'nei ayim. What's clear here is that the discussion is about the part of the liver that is facing the intestine, which leads some to say that the problem is not with the liver, it's actually a problem with the intestines in the b'nei ayim. And the fact that the kaved went green facing the side of the b'nei ayim means that the b'nei ayim also have a problem. And if they have a problem, then it's a neck of mashu. So any green, any little problem with them is a trefa. So that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is to say that if the kaved on that side is green, it means that it's going to spread to the entirety of the liver, and that's what's going to create the problem. Whereas the Rambam says, keneged b'nei me'ayim, is that the liver turned the same color as the b'nei me'ayim, which is an indication of the fact that it is something that is spread amongst both of them. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, havilei hayu tarnagola, he had this chicken, shadet the kamei to Rabbi Elazar HaKapar b'ribi. He sent it to Rabbi Elazar HaKapar, Beribi means the gadol ador. Amalei, Yerokim Havu Ba'akshara. It's green, it's okay. Vanan Tnan, what about our Mishnah? Yerokin Psulin. It turns green, that is Pasul. How come Elazar HaKapar is telling him, oh, it's green, it's totally fine? So lo amro Yerokim Psulim, elu b'kurkuban b'leivu b'kaveit. So here's what I mentioned to you in the Mishnah. There's a qualification. Only in organs that are normally not green are problematic when they turn green. And that references to the gizzard, the heart, and the liver. The heart and the liver are obviously of a reddish-brown color when they are healthy, and the kurkuban as well is a lightish-brown color. So all of those, if they turn green, that's an indication of a problem that the fire caught there or had did damage to those organs. With regards to the other organs, which seem to include the b'nei me'ayim and other areas there, if they're green, that's their natural color. If that's their natural color, then them being green is not an indication of a trefa, it's an indication of a healthy organ. And that's what Rabbi Elazar HaKapar is saying, that it's green, that's why it's okay. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a braita that supports that contention. Beilu b'nei me'ayim amru. Which internal organs is this said about? B'kurkuban, b'leiv, u'b'kaveid. Those three organs, they have a din if they turn green that they are problematic. The other organs do not have that. Now, Tosafot over here says, Avareya lo choshim. It doesn't mention lungs over here. Kine damrina lekaman, den ein reya la oaf. There is no lungs in an oaf. Lo linpo, v'lo lechamer. Not to fall down if it has damage from a impact or damage from a fire. Even though the truth is that they do have lungs, but they are very different than the lungs of the animals. They don't have all the lobes and all that different sectioning that the animals have. And therefore, the lungs are in a totally different category. They don't have a din of trefa like those of a behemoth. The major issue we saw by behemoth is the lungs. I mean, that's the only thing that Rashi says we check are the lungs, because there's such a high likelihood of it being a trefa through the lungs that we don't even check for other trefa. We only check for the trefa by the lungs. On the other hand, by birds, the reya, the lungs, aren't even a big issue. That's why I mentioned to you before that galat kosher is only relevant by animals. It's not relevant by birds at all. Even though, again, the term has become a borrowed term to mean a higher standard of kashrut. But lungs are not an issue by birds like they are by animals. And therefore, Tosafot says, that's why it doesn't mention the lungs over here. Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, he had this chicken. Shadr le kamei de Rabbi Abou. He sent it to Rabbi Abou to check it. Barmalei, adumim havu v'tarfa. He says they are red, and therefore he paskin it is a treifa. Panat nan adumim ksheirim. Don't we have our Mishnah that says if they're red, then they're good. Amalei, adumim shohoriku, that which is red, if they turn lighter, they turn yellowish, they turn green. Ve'irokin, those that are normally green or yellowish, she'edimu, that became red, treifa. And that's what he's saying over here. The things that I saw that were red, that are problematic, are not supposed to be red. They're supposed to be a yellowish or a greenish color. Lo amru adumim ksheirim, elevalei v'kurku banan kavei. Adumim are only a verification of the organs being intact with regards to the heart, the gizzard, and the liver, because that's their normal hue. But when it comes to other organs where their color is not normally red, then red is considered to be a problem with the organ. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Achi Amar Rav Imani, adumim shohoriku, if you have something that was red, that's the normal color of the organ. So again, those are the three organs, the gizzard, the heart, and the liver. Shohoriku, that they became discolored. Vishalkan, and then you cook them, vichazru ve'edimu, and then they go back to their original color, ksherim, then they are fine. Maitaima, what's the reason that's true, is kutra ayobu. The damage from the fire comes in one of two ways. The truth is that the major damage in most fires is actually the smoke and not the fire itself. It's actually the smoke and the water putting out the fire that does most of the damage, more than the fire itself. And similarly over here, the possibility is that you have a discoloration of the organ, not because the fire actually affected the organ, but the smoke clung onto the organ or created a layer on top of the organ. So therefore, the discoloration is coming from the smoke and not from the fire itself. If that's the case, when you boil it up, what ends up happening is that discoloration from the smoke goes away, and then the organ goes back to its normal color. So that's an indication that it was a smoke problem and not a fire problem. If that's the case, it's not a treifa. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Abanan Ne'amar, we also say, Adumim Shalohoriku. If you have something that is red, that did not change to green, Vishalkan Bohoriku. And then if you cook them, they turn or they discolor, treifa. That's a treifa. Maitaima, Igla Behatayu. That their inner secret has been disclosed. The truth is, they were affected by the fire, but their external side or external membranes didn't show it. It was internally problematic. As soon as you cooked it, all of a sudden their embarrassment or their deep secrets have now been revealed through the cooking process. So Amar Rav Ashi, Hilkach. For this reason, lo lechol ishish elo bishalako, that you can't eat birds until you boil them up in a pot. If boiling over the pot gives you so much information, then you should have to cook all chickens in order to get this information. Because first one will tell you that if it was a treifa and that's only externally and internally it was fine because it'll take off that outer layer. Or vice versa. If there really is a problem, the problem will emerge when you boil it in the pot. And the Gemara says, velohi. We do not agree with this. Akzuke ri'uta lo machzikinan. We do not assume that there is a problem over here. So Rashi says that the problem here that we're discussing is that if the animal fell into the fire, then with a statement that Rav Ashi says is, we shouldn't eat chickens until you cook them. So Rav Ashi is saying, when you have an indication of a problem, don't eat the chickens until you cook them. The Gemara is pushing back on that and saying, as long as there's no external indication of a problem, lo tarfinin la, elim ke mitrame de shalik la, v'kazi riuta. Elim ke, you happens to happen when you cook the chicken that it shows up. But we're not going to indicate to you, you have to do this to the chicken. You can roast the chicken and eat it, because we're not going to assume there's something wrong with the chicken. If you don't see anything wrong, if you eyeball the organs and they all look fine, then you don't have to go through the cooking process in order to check them. We're not looking for trouble. If there is trouble, if there is a break in the chazokah, then we're going to do a deep check. But if there's no break in the chazokah, we're going to assume everything is fine. That's the way Rashi reads it. You could see reading the Gemara differently, which is, Ravashi is saying this about any bird. Every bird, even if it wasn't in a fire, you should cook it because maybe something happened and you're going to get some information about it. The Gemara Long comes along and says, no, it's not true by any bird. Only birds that have been in the fire do you have to do this. So that would be actually a bigger chumrah. The way Rashi is saying it, it's a big kula, which is that until you have evidence of a problem, that doesn't mean just falling into the fire. It means that you see an organ that's discolored, then you have to cook it. Because then you'll either change back to its original state, or you have an indication that it might change color, or the fire already touched it, then you cook it to see if it'll change color. But absent that, we're not going to make you check at all, even if the animal was in the fire. On the other hand, the second way we read it is that as soon as it's in a fire, that is the reuta. That's the problem. And anytime it's been in a fire, even if you don't see any visible signs of problem, you're going to have to cook it in order to do a check. So those are two different ways to read the conclusion of the Gemara. Rashi is obviously reading it the kula, but you could see, and there are Rishonim that read it the chumra to say that the reuta is that it fell in the fire. As soon as you have that, then you have to cook it no matter what. Whereas Rashi says only if it went in the fire and there's a visual problem that you see there, then you have to cook it. But otherwise, you don't have to cook it because the chazak is that it is a kosher animal. Which is really related to a statement up above where we saw that with the liver is discolored next to the intestines. There the Gemara says, Biyadua shenafla l'or. There we know for certain that it fell into the fire of Nechmu b'nemayim v'treifa. And it is a treifa. From there it sounds like Biyadua that we didn't know was in the fire. And now that we do know it's in the fire from that discoloration. It seems to indicate if you find out this information, then we would assume that it wasn't fire and we'd be toreif the animal. On the other hand, the Ramban says, based on our Gemara over here, where it says, even if it changed colors, we're not going to therefore assign it as if it went into the fire and now we have new information. Because there are other reasons for discoloration besides fire. And therefore, only if we know it went into the fire would we have that supposition that the discoloration is a problem because of the fire. But otherwise, we would not assume that. Other Rishonim, like the Rambam, will say that if you find that the liver turned green, that's an indication that it fell into the fire, and therefore, it is going to be a treifa. Drosa v'tarfa b'kotel. It was stomped or trampled on, or thrown against the wall. Malaza ben Antigonos, Yishuma malaza b'Rebbe Yenai, Achat zo v'achat zo tzricha b'dika. They both require checking. Rashi says, Afo pishishatam eight late. Even after the trauma, if the bird survives for the next 24 hours, you still need to check the internal organs. He says, Hashem and Nishbara Shidra Nifsakachot. Because you have to check those organs that there might have been something that broke along the way that needs to be checked for over here. And so that goes back to something that we discussed earlier. What exactly is the check that needs to be done over here? After you have trauma to the animal, where it fell or something happens, is the check the same thing as what would have happened if the animal went through the trauma? Or is this a different check than the trauma? Rambam seems to think that the check that you do after 24 hours is for the trauma itself. The trauma itself does not become manifest until after 24 hours. So you only check after 24 hours because that's when those signs will become visible, and therefore you're doing a check for the trauma itself. So Rashi, on the other hand, says that once the 24 hours are gone, the trauma's gone. You can't check for that trauma. That trauma is aloha l'moshe m'Sinai. You can't check for it. So once the 24 hours are gone, you clear the trauma state. But then there might be still other problems, which are broken bones or broken areas that would be a treifa, and you have to check for those. Nothing to do with the trauma. The trauma you cleared after the 24 hours, the other checks are for other items that can make it into a treifa that could have happened because of the intensity of the impact. So that's the difference between Rashi and the Rambam. And Rashi, the Shita Tov here says, you're not checking for the Risuke Barim over here. You're checking for broken bones, which is a side effect of that trauma, not the problem of Risuke Barim. Risuke Barim was cleared after 24 hours. You're checking for other problems, other trefot that could appear. Okay, next Mishnah. Veiluk Sheirobo. Similar to what we had by the Beima. Veiluk Trefot. And then you have an opposite Mishnah Kanjas, Mishnah, which is Veiluk Sheirot. Nikva HaGargeret. If there's only a home in the trachea, onistiga, or it has a crack longwise. This is again something that we discussed before. Both of those are not problematic by the trachea. Hekta chuda arusha. If the weasel attacked on the head, makom she'eno se'alta trefa, in an area that doesn't make it into a trefa, meaning an area that's not opposite the membrane of the brain. Nikev hazefek. If the crop gets a hole in it, as opposed to the gizzard. The crop along the intestine is the first pouch that you see along the intestine, where the food waits or hangs out for a while. The gizzard is the actual digestive stomach, which is further along, that has that crushing motion. So the crop, the zephic, a hole is not enough to make it into a treifa. as opposed to the gizzard. Rabbi Amar, afil nital, even if it was taken away totally, even if the crop doesn't exist at all, it is a kosher behema. There's no treif over here. Yatsu bnei me'aha, if the internal intestines came out of the animal, velo nikvu, and they did not get a puncture in them, that is considered still to be kosher. Nishtiberu gaveha, if its wings were broken. Now Rashi over here explains that the wings being broken mean the bones of the wings, the bones that exit the bird's body itself into the wings. If those are broken, then it's not problematic. Or if its leg is broken, or nimrutu knafel, or its plumage has been taken out. Now, as Rashi explains over here, there are two types of feathers on the bird. There's the larger feathers, which he calls the notzah gdola, and he calls that plumes, or plumage. Notzah hidadaka are the small, very fuzzy feathers that are up against the body of the bird. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im nakla notzah psula. If the plumage is taken off or plucked off, that is fine. Rabbi Yehuda says that's only true if that which was plucked off were the larger feathers. But if it was the down feathers, which are the very small, fuzzy feathers that are against the body, then that makes it into a psula, that makes it into a treifa. So none of these items make the bird into a treifa. They're all kshirim. We're going to see with the breaking of the leg, it depends where along the leg it's broken. If it's been harkova ulamato, as long as it's along the joint of the leg and below, then it's ksheirah. If it's above the harkova, then it could be problematic. Tanrabanan, maseh b'Rabbi Simai v'Rabbi Tzadok. There was this incident with Rabbi Simai and Rabbi Tzadok, shalchula e'aber hashana b'lud. They're on their way to Lud in order to have a gathering of the Chachamim to make it into a leap year. V'shavtu b'ono. On the way there, it was Shabbat, and they stopped for Shabbat in the city of Ono. Behoru b'tarpachat pirabi b'zafik. And they paskined about a tarpachat. We saw before in the Gemara yesterday that the word tarpachat, aim, and shlovchit are all synonymous, and they all mean the womb. So over there, they paskined with regards to the womb, like Rabbi with a crop. Ibailuhu. The girsa that we have here is the girsa of Rashi, which is Haru b'tarpachat l'isura. They paskined by a womb that it's a sur if it was missing. Karebi b'zefek l'hetera. And on the other hand, they gave a psak with regards to the crop that it's mutar, like Rabbi said. So they actually gave two piske aloch over here. One psak aloch is a missing womb is problematic. And that the missing crop is okay. O Dilma. Haru b'tarpachat l'hetera. Karebi b'zefek. They paskin about a womb that it was mutar when it's totally gone. It's similar to the way that Rabbi does by a crop. Aval karabi b'zafek lo spirulu. But they don't hold like Rabbi when it comes to the zefek. They paskin that the womb is like Rabbi's din of zefek. But implicit in that is that they don't hold of Rabbi with regards to a zefek with regards to a crop. Teiku. The Gemara doesn't know how that psak went. They don't know how to interpret the psak. Again, they said something about the womb. Something about Rebbe and the Zafek. The question is, do you have two Piske Halacha here? Or you have one Psak Halacha over here? And if there's one Psak Halacha over here, the implicit from that is that they don't hold a Rabbi by the crop. If you have two Piske Halacha, that means they do hold a Rabbi by the crop. That's the way Rashi phrases the question. The Bali HaTosafot are somewhat perplexed by this explanation because there are other simple formulations of the statement over here and other options that make more sense. And therefore he says, v'nira de garsina b'sfarim hocha. He thinks the kirsas should be like this. Ho ruba tarpachat lehetera, uke rabi b'zefek lehetera. Did they paskin lehetera by the womb? And they paskin like the zefek lehetera. O Dilma. Ho ruba tarpachat lehetera, ke rabi b'zefek. Did they paskin in the womb like rabi b'zefek? Alfal b'ke rabi zefek lo sfirluhu. But by rabi and the zefek, they don't hold of him. There wasn't any question whether they paskin the isur or not by the womb. The milta de pshita he de sharya, because it's so straightforward that it is mutar. The way that Rashi has the girsa, the first possibility was that they said a tarpachat is asur, and by Rabbi we agree that the zefek is mutar. But that means that they said that the womb being missing is asur. In the second version, they said the womb being missing is mutar, but the zefek is asur. So it's just a question in the two lishonot of Rashi, which one was asur and which one was mutar. One of them was asur, one of them is mutar, and a question of which is which. Tosafot says, and he brings evidence to that, that everybody thinks that when the womb is out, that the animal is mutar. And there's no dissenting opinion that says it's asur. So why is there a safek here that they were oser, something with the aim shalah, with the womb? And therefore, the Tosafot's version of the Girsa is, in both instances, they pask in the heter, the gabe, the womb. The only question is, what is their view versus the zefek? Did they say the zefek is also mutar like the womb? Or did they say that the womb is mutar, but the zefek is asur? But in both instances, they said that the womb is mutar. Again, in contrast to Rashi, where in the first Lashon of Rashi, the womb would have been asur. So those are the two versions of this story. And the Gemara leaves it as a take-to, as an unresolved issue as to what the incident was. Amar Rava, Vitei Rav Shimon Levi, Gagol Shel Zefek Nidon Keveshet. The upper side of the crop has the same din as the esophagus. The esophagus, if it's punctured by Mashu, even a nekev makes it into a trefa. A crop, even if it's punctured, is not a problem. Rabbi said even if the crop's missing entirely, it's not a problem. Heicha, where exactly is the top of the crop? So Amar Bibi Barabai Kol Shenim Tach Imo. Anything that narrows with it, which means that as the esophagus descends down the neck of the bird, it enters into the area where the crop is. It starts to widen as it enters into the crop. So if you're looking at it from the perspective of the crop towards the esophagus, then as you go up towards the esophagus, the crop starts to narrow. Where that part where it starts to narrow, that is a din like the esophagus itself, and therefore it'd be nidon kamashu. So that'd be that small area as the esophagus begins to enter into the crop, and it starts to widen into the crop before it reaches the full area of the crop, that still has a din of esophagus according to this view. That's the way that Rashi explains it. And the Rambam says that anything where when the animal, the bird, extends its neck, that creates a tension or a pull on the area of the crop that it narrows down, that's the area that's considered part of the esophagus, which seemingly is even a larger area than Rashi, because Rashi is just talking about the natural curvature of the esophagus, but I'm saying when it's under tension that it pulls, so that seems to be a larger area that's in the end of the esophagus towards the crop, and the Riva, which has the largest or the most expansive view of what this means, suggests that it is that if you pulled the esophagus taut, which is that the esophagus goes in one end of the crop, then you have this basket of a organ, and then it exits on the other side to move towards the gizzard. So the truth is that if you didn't have the crop there at all, you would just have a pipe that went straight down to the gizzard. So the idea of where it narrows is if you pull it tight or taut, whatever would have been the straightaway that would have kept the esophagus flowing without it dropping into the crop, that all has a din of the esophagus. That's as if the esophagus continued. Which really means the upper half of the esophagus above the crop, if you were to pull it taut, that whole area that would have just kept the tubing going, that's called the top of the crop, or the area that is considered to be like the esophagus. So it's not just that area in the beginning that narrowed, or really widened as it went into the crop, it's the entire top area of the crop, which would have been, had the piping continued, that would have been the continuation of the esophagus had it not been for the crop. So that's the way that the Riva explains it, as opposed to Rashi's explanation, which is it's a very small area where it widens out of the esophagus into the crop. Yotzu menei me'ah. If the intestines went out of the animal, it's not a treifa. Amar Rav Shmuel b'Rabbi Yitzchak, lo shanu el shelo hefach ben. That's only true if they were not changed in direction. Which means that if the intestines came out and then they went back in, as long as they went back in the same way that they were already situated when they came out, then it's not a treifa. But if somehow they got turned around, whereby there's different curvatures now, or the one that was below is now above, there's some redirecting of the organ when it went back in, then it's a treifa. Tosafot over here says the problem with the innards or the mayim being put in improperly is not that they won't function, but that will cause a problem in them, and then they will puncture. And since they are twisted differently, or they're in a different location, that will be cause for a nekev, and it's subsumed under the treifa of nekev in the Mishnah. That's what the Baalei Tosafot suggests over here. And seems from the Gemara over here that this changing of the location or the positioning of the intestines is only if they came out and then they're being pushed back in or put back in. But if it was congenitally that way, it's not clear here that's a treifa. And there is a discussion amongst the early Rishonei Ashkenaz, like the Rav Yoh, as to whether there is a congenital problem if the intestines are actually out of place or in a different location or a different setup than normally for an animal, as to whether that has the same impact over here. Because Hashem made you, and then He prepared you. He set you up properly. That Hashem created a certain way, or Rashi says, kano, it's from the word kano, means a base, but it means something that is structurally sound, and something that belongs where it belongs. In the modern Hebrew, konanut means prepared or preparation, but over konaniyot, either like Rashi says, is a basis, a base, or it means a prepared state, which is that every organ has its particular place and its shape, form, and position, and all those are particular to make the organ function properly. Although the Aruch says that the word konain comes from to be curved or twisted around, and in that case, it's then specifically speaking to the intestines that are running back and forth and all around and twisted around. That's what it means, konaniyut, that I made them in that particular way, that they're twisted or turned or wrapped around in a particular fashion. If something's changed about that, then the person won't live. Meaning that the organs are situated, especially the intestines, are situated in such a way that allows the person to live. If that situation is changed, then the person won't live. Similar to what is true by the person, is also true by the bird itself. Tanya, a Rabbi Meir Omer, who has chavi choneneka, krocha de kulabe. There's like an agadic explanation of what does it mean that Hashem made you and He set you up to have everything. It's like a city that has everything in it. Mimenu kohenav. You have priests. Mimenu neviyav. You have prophets. Mimenu sarav. You have princes. Mimenu melachav. You have kings. Meaning that the Jewish people have, within their own midst, all the different leadership positions that are needed for a nation. They all derive internally from Klal Yisrael. And Hashem gave us all we needed in order to be autonomous and to worship Hashem properly. Shenemar, mimenu pina, mimenu yateid. Mimenu keshet milchama, mimenu yatei, kol nogeis yachtav. From Klal Yisrael. Comes the cornerstone, from Klal Yisrael. Comes the stake, and Hashem gives everything that you need, including both in the forms of leadership, as well as in terms of needs and supplies that you need. Hashem provides everything internally to Klal Yisrael. All the building blocks and foundations of what we need, we just have to make something of it, but Hashem gave us everything that we need. We don't have to go look anywhere else for that which is needed. How arma'a, so there's was this Aramean, or the alternate use is how you Roma, Roman, the Chazilau Gabra, the Nofel Me'igra La'ara, saw that he fell off from the roof down to the ground. Pake Krase, Menofel Gmaine, he split open his belly, and out came the intestines. Now you have a problem, because you got to get the intestines back in, but if you put the intestines back in the wrong way or in the wrong order, then he's not going to live anyway, so you have to get them back in. Achilibre, so this Aramean or Roman brought the son of the one who was on the ground with his innards spilled out, v'shachte kamei, and shechted his son right in front of him, v'achuzate naim, but he did that through an optical illusion. He didn't really do it. He did it in such a way that the person thought that his son was shechted. Ingid v'itnach, he fainted and groaned and moaned, meaning he sighed. He was so overwhelmed by the sight of his son being killed in front of him that he groaned and his stomach was turning over because of it and he fainted. All the mine, the innards were pulled back in. Because of that trauma, not just the trauma of falling, but now the psychological trauma of seeing his son being killed in front of him, somehow that pulled his innards back in, and therefore you didn't have to handle them. They went back in naturally. V'chayte l'karse, and then that Aramean or that Roman stitched him up so that it wouldn't be a problem. So both from the perspective of it was too painful to do it by hand, so therefore he had him faint by doing this optical illusion in front of him, and therefore he could stitch him up and fix him up. But more importantly, based on what we said now, if the innards or the intestines come out and they're not put back in properly, you have to have them go back in properly, meaning that naturally go back in. And so by doing this optical illusion of shechting his son in front of him, he was in such a state that he almost sucked back in his innards because of that, and then they went back in naturally and sat naturally, so therefore he could live on afterwards. So he did this not to hurt him, but to help him out in order to prevent it being a problem of the innards being put back in improperly. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Nun Zayin, Omid Aleph.